In part one of this two-part series, you'll hear the perspectives of an advocate for renters and an attorney with a landlord-tenant practice. In part two, next week, you'll hear about the assistance that's available from your local government as well as the state's 23 community action organizations. So we'll start with Adrienne Bush. She is Executive Director of the Homeless and Housing Coalition of Kentucky. You can learn more about the organization online at hhck.org. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Adrienne.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So this pandemic has been and it continues to interfere with the ability of many to keep earning an income and to pay their rent. And during this outbreak, evictions have been associated with the spread of COVID-19. So national and state bans on evictions have again been extended to the end of this month. First, if you could help us understand the extent of these circumstances here in Kentucky, how many Kentucky rental households are at risk of eviction?
So according to the most recent Census Household Pulse data, this is a survey that's been going on since April that looks at a lot of different things. But the piece that we, of course, are interested in is the housing security piece. And according to the most recent data, which was pulled from November 25th through December 7th, we have a lot of Kentuckians who are at risk of losing their housing to eviction. They report, 44% of Kentucky renters are somewhat to very likely to be evicted over the next couple months. 37% of all renters have slight or no confidence in their ability to pay. And then, of course, looking behind to the prior month, we have 20% of all renters were behind, and that would have been October, November rent. When you disaggregate the data, this is impacting certain groups of people more than others. 58% of all Black Kentucky renters were behind on rent. 37% of Hispanic or Latino renters report the same. So that shows that the problem is widespread. It's not limited to individual decision making. We are looking at a widespread problem that is affecting a lot of Kentuckians.
In terms of who is affected most, Adrienne, how does this current economic crisis brought on by the pandemic, how does that differ from the Great Recession?
So the primary difference between the Great Recession and the ongoing COVID-19 economic crisis is that it seems to be affecting low-income service sector employees more. If you look at the public health notices and shutdown orders across the states, the folks who were primarily affected were in the service sector, in retail, in restaurants, that sort of thing. Those are lower income jobs. Therefore, those folks are more likely to be renting as opposed to owning their own home. In contrast, in the Great Recession, much of the employment actually, or the unemployment to be more precise, occurred more in the middle class, white collar jobs. And those folks, if you have a mortgage, typically you have stronger financial resources in terms of how much equity you have in your home, other informal support networks, family, friends who can help you out for a short period of time. Here, we have folks who were on the brink to begin with. Most likely their housing was unaffordable pre-pandemic. And so any sort of income reductions, either directly or indirectly attributable to COVID-19, has had a drastic effect.
Well, we've been hearing for years that we as a society are generally a paycheck away from this kind of calamity. And so now here we are.
Yeah. It is. Most Americans are, you know, closer to losing their home than they are to, you know, having two or three. And the affordable housing crisis is not just an urban issue. It's not just a coastal issue. We have been experiencing it in Kentucky for quite some time. If you look at, you know, folks who are extremely low income, who are, you know, making less than 30% of the area median income, you know, for a family of four, that's about $24,000. Their housing generally wasn't affordable to begin with. They were paying more than 30% of their income on their housing costs, on their rent, their utilities. So going into the pandemic, Kentucky was already short about 75,000 affordable homes. So it was already a crisis anyway. And then this has just kind of opened everything up into the perfect storm.
Well, for their part, landlords, especially landlords with only a few properties, small owners, are going through their own crisis. Rental payments dried up. Mortgages and utilities still need to be paid. How do actions being taken by corporate landlords differ from those being taken by ma and pa rental property owners?
So we know nationwide that bigger corporate landlords are driving a significant share of the eviction activity. And it's especially unfortunate because these are the companies who have the greater ability to weather any sort of economic storm. In contrast, you have folks who maybe rent a couple of properties. They may have inherited a house from their parents, or they may live in one half of a duplex. They don't have the resources to go through, you know, months and months without payment. And it is very telling to me that, you know, the economist Mark Zandi has looked at this issue nationwide. You know, there is, as of December, we had $70 billion in unpaid back rent. So if you look at that and then look at, you know, mom and pop landlords, they can't afford that. That's why we really believe that the policy solution that makes the most sense for the way the housing market operates today is broad-based rent relief. A portion of that was included in the last COVID relief package.
Well, human nature being what it is, we're hearing from some who represent landlords that one of the problems that they're having that's really exasperating to them is having to sort out who is genuinely unable to pay because of this situation versus some tenants who are just gaming the situation, knowing that they can't be evicted for non-payment. What's your take on that dilemma?
You know, the folks that we are hearing from anecdotally, who reach out to us in crisis, it genuinely have exhausted every last resource. And it's hard to say, I don't know that I personally can make that determination about every single tenant or renter, whether or not, you know, should they have prioritized their rent or should they have prioritized food? And if they prioritize food, are they gaming the system? I think that's a really tough determination to make. And I also, you know, if you look at the census household pulse data, one of the things it asks is, what did families use in the last 7 days to meet spending needs? Whether it was regular income sources, like pre-pandemic, or was it credit cards or loans, or borrowing from friends and family, or unemployment insurance benefit payments? And so I think, without knowing every single person's individual circumstances and support networks and decision-making processes, it is, I personally would hesitate to try to make that distinction.
There is a new study that we just came upon from researchers at Georgia Tech, And it paints a pretty haunting picture of the human impact of evictions and their disproportionate impact on neighborhoods with more low-income households, people of color, households with children. And the research identifies a connection between increasing eviction filings and a rise in reports of child maltreatment. Are you aware of this happening in Kentucky?
I am not specifically aware of any studies that have been done, specific to Kentucky. Those findings from the Georgia Tech study, that doesn't surprise me. If you consider child maltreatment, holistically, that can encompass, people think of abuse, but it also encompasses neglect. And it's not unheard of for a protection and permanency case within the Department for Community-Based Services to be opened up because a social worker with DCBS doesn't think that the family has adequate housing. Or if a family is in shelter, they're more likely to, have an open case. So we do know from research that's been done over the past 20, 25 years around housing security, that housing insecurity has a terrible impact on children. Just the ability to be stable in a home, if you think about school or education outcomes, it's incredibly hard to learn when you don't know exactly where you're going to be, if you're going to be couch surfing, or if you're literally homeless, especially right now during the pandemic when most Kentucky schools are closed to in-person learning. Eviction is extremely traumatic for children. And if you look at who tends to experience eviction more, you are correct. It is, mostly households headed by women, people of color, Black Kentuckians. It's all just coming to a head at this point.
How would you say the eviction of an individual home, how would that affect the social structure and even the mood of a whole neighborhood?
It's incredibly disruptive because if you look at communities or neighborhoods, if you have people coming in, being there for a while, then suddenly getting evicted, their stuff is out on the street, neighboring folks may think, great, am I next? And then in terms of relationship building, it's hard to, be in relationship with folks when there's a lot of upheaval. And it's disruptive to the school systems. If there are children in the home, school-aged children, then the school has to regroup and figure out where the kids are now. Or, if they end up, couch surfing with another family, then chances are they're doubled up with that other family or individual. And that is usually just a temporary situation. They may be overcrowded. Relationships may go bad. You can't stay there indefinitely. So we know that, particularly in Kentucky, in low-income areas, there is a lot of disruption, upheaval, and it definitely starts to take its toll on the neighborhood or the community over time.
Listening, it strikes me that we kind of have a tendency to tiptoe around humiliation, don't we? But man, it is ever present when all your stuff is out on the curb.
Absolutely. And you have no place to put it. If you couldn't afford your rent to begin with, then you probably can't afford a storage unit, especially if you're trying to save up for the next place. And it is a very visceral picture, I guess, of your life just being dumped out by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. This latest stimulus bill that was enacted by Congress and finally signed, extended the federal moratorium on evictions, and Governor Beshear has extended it on the state level until January 31st. And the package also provides more emergency rental assistance, but there's no reason to think that the pandemic is going to suddenly disappear on February 1st. In fact, it's likely to be with us for many, many months to come. And that's going to add up to billions more dollars in back rent owed by tenants who are financially strapped because of the pandemic. What do you foresee happening after this latest extension of the eviction ban expires on February 1st?
Well, there are a couple of actions that can take place in the meantime. You are correct. The latest extension buys a little bit more time. Does it get us through to the end of the pandemic? By no means. But we have signed on to a letter, and many organizations have as well here in Kentucky and across the nation, urging the incoming Biden administration to take action via executive order to strengthen the current CDC eviction moratorium and extend it. And that is how the original CDC moratorium came to be in September, in any case. So we would urge the Biden administration to go ahead. Congress has taken action to get us through another month, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and take executive action and extend this and expand it to really protect more renters. One of our criticisms of the current eviction moratorium is that it only covers evictions for non-payment of rent. And so that leaves a lot of loopholes for other types of court filings and set outs to go through. A landlord may decide to go forward with an eviction because the tenant failed to take their trash cans back to their driveway within 24 hours, or other lease violations like that. That's frustrating because an eviction is an eviction is an eviction. And if the result is still the same, then it really doesn't matter the cause. If the result is folks are doubled up or in their cars or trying to access emergency shelter, it doesn't really matter what the cause of eviction was officially. So we have a limited amount of time. We've got, just under 1 month now, the federal government can take decisive, nationwide, uniform action to try to prevent folks from losing their homes.
You mentioned what you would like to see happen with the incoming administration and the new Congress. I'm wondering about our state legislature. It gets down to business for a 30-day session in early February. Is there any proposed legislation that you are watching, that you're tracking?
We will be looking at any sort of landlord-tenant law proposals, and really trying to urge our lawmakers here in Kentucky to do what they can at the state level to strengthen renters' rights and really minimize any sort of punitive landlord-tenant law. A lot of states have adopted the Uniform Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, or URLTA, and Kentucky officially has it on the books, but the way it is written into the statute is that local communities have to opt into it in whole, and that is frustrating because it means, we have a handful of cities and counties in Kentucky who have those protections and responsibilities in place for renters, but the vast majority of Kentuckians do not have those protections. And so that is something that we will be looking for. And then the other thing, too, is just it trying to make sure that any sort of housing legislation that gets proposed, that we look at it through the lens of how does this affect the most vulnerable of our neighbors, and whether or not it actually strengthens or undermines our communities.
Well, Adrienne, we could talk about this for so long because there's so much depth to it, and it's so widely affecting, I guess is the proper way of putting it. But there's one thing I'd like to ask you before we go, and that's that census canvassing was well underway as the pandemic got underway. And I'm just wondering how might this snapshot of us influence policymaking for the coming decade?
That's an excellent question. The fact that we had the census, the decennial census going on in the midst of a pandemic meant that for the first time in my career that I can remember, we had closer to real-time housing security data than I've ever seen before. And so I think it will help definitely advocates, and I hope policymakers make good choices about how do we make sure that all families and households in our communities are secure, that we're not just prioritizing one set of Kentuckians over another. And we're looking at it really, how do these economic factors really impact housing security as opposed to individual decision making or other factors. I do think the census data, especially, looking at how people pay for their housing and how much of their income they have to use in order to stay in a home, is very telling. And it definitely points to the need for continued federal investment in housing as a whole, and potentially state investment moving in the future.
That's Adrienne Bush. She is Executive Director of the Homeless and Housing Coalition of Kentucky. And again, you can find out more about her organization online at hhck.org. Thanks, Adrienne.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Coming up after the break.
I think it's important for our listeners to understand what the moratorium is.
EKU professor and practicing attorney James Pennington takes us into the fine print of the lease and making rental payments in this pandemic economy. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.